be Panama. Hmm? All right. Mr.
No.
Mark Fuller versus the United States.
May it please the court, my name is James Finney. I am a student from Notre Dame Law School, along with my colleague Benjamin Whipple, under the supervision of Bob Palmer. We're here on behalf of appellant Mark Fuller.
I don't know if you checked the bench, but over there is the University of Indiana, and here's a Marquette, so you got two. I mean, I'm neutral unless I'm a DePaul man.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court granted a certificate of appealability on two issues, one of which I will address, and the second which my co-counsel will address. The issue I'll address is whether, having raised an ineffective assistance of counsel claim based upon different facts on direct appeal, appellant is barred from collaterally attacking ineffective assistance of his counsel's performance at sentencing. We would respectfully ask that this court remand this 2255 motion, ineffective assistance of counsel at sentencing, to the district court for an evidentiary hearing on that matter, based upon the Supreme Court's recent decision in Massaro versus the United States. And the crux of that holding essentially stated that failure to raise such ineffective assistance of counsel claims on direct appeal does not procedurally bar them from being brought in collateral proceedings such as the 2255.
Do you think this circuit has ever held that?
That they are procedurally barred?
As the Second Circuit did.
There is some language that the government would indicate that this court has followed that rule at times.
Recently?
Galbraith is the case that they cite principally for that principle.
Usually what we find is that we discourage raising ineffective assistance of counsel on direct appeal and suggest that they pursue a habeas. That's been the practice of our general.
In which we're thankfully asking you to do in this case.
Well, but when you do raise it and have a dispositive decision made on it, isn't that what happened here?
No, Your Honor. Essentially what happened in the district court was it was dismissed on procedural grounds based on the procedural default rule, which the Supreme Court then overruled in Massaro. The merits of the case were never ruled upon by the district court. That's essentially what we were asking for in this case, is that the case be remanded so that we could have an evidentiary hearing and have the merits of the case ruled upon by the district court. And I would also highlight the fact that that is essentially the intention of the Supreme Court in its ruling in Massaro. And the government, in its brief, essentially stipulates to that and concedes that fact. So the principal issue before the court has essentially been agreed upon at this point. However, the government does argue in the alternative the claims in front of the court are meritless and therefore should just be dismissed. To that, we would certainly disagree. And since this claim has never been ruled upon in the merits of our district court, we think it would be imprudent for the appellate court to make a finding of fact on this issue, rather remanding it to the district court for ruling on the issue. Regarding the merits of the case, the government argues that, you know, appellate counsel should have brought this claim on direct appeal, and as Your Honor has already stated, and as we would contend, such a claim would be imprudent time to bring it on direct appeal, as the appellant would not have time to fully develop the factual record to support such a claim. Second, the government argues that there's no objective credible evidence to support such a claim because of various reasons. With regard to those, the government specifically points to the fact that there is no affidavit in support of this claim. With that regard, we would argue that given the tenor of the Supreme Court's decision in Massaro, which seems to indicate that an evidentiary hearing is a prudent matter and every time that one of these claims goes before district court, that is not necessary. Further, the fact that this type of ineffective assistance counsel claim, one at sentencing, is based largely on whether or not trial counsel had any sort of strategy behind his decision not to, in this case, object to certain sentence level enhancements. We would argue that those types of factual things should be brought out in an evidentiary hearing where counsel can be examined to find out his strategy behind why he did or did not object to certain sentence level enhancements. And until that's made, a factual determination on the merits of the case cannot be made by district court.
I guess to go back to my initial question, there was an ineffective assistance of counsel raised in his direct appeal, wasn't there?
Yes, there was, Your Honor. That was a conflict of interest claim.
Right.
Which is the second issue in this case.
Right. And tell me again why he has a right to bring a second ineffective assistance.
These are entirely different set of facts, focusing on not his performance related to the plea agreement, but his performance at sentencing. And as you have stated and as the Supreme Court has stated, the best place to bring those claims is in a collateral attack, a 2255 motion before the district court that witnessed the original proceeding, and in this case, the sentencing hearing. And so he's bringing the claim where he thinks best to bring it, and apparently the courts agree with him. And that's why we're asking this court to remand this to hear the claim on the merits in an evidentiary hearing. Finally, we would just... If an affidavit is something that's essentially concerned by this court as far as a basis for factual proof to even put a claim forth, we would point to the original filing that defendant filed pro se in front of the district court, in which he filled out a set of pleadings and then signed it under oath as analogous to an affidavit, and therefore satisfying that requirement, meeting the burden, and therefore pushing him into an evidentiary hearing where he can cross-examine counsel and determine the strategy behind his failure to object at sentencing to the sentence level enhancements. And quickly, my time has run out, so I will yield.
Go ahead, if you want another minute, go ahead.
I've essentially covered the crux of my argument, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Ben Whipple, and I'm also a law student at Notre Dame Law School. I will be addressing the second issue on which this court granted a certificate of appealability. That issue is the impact that Massaro has on the district court's decision to bar Mr. Fuller's conflict of interest claim on his 2255 motion. The district court barred Mr. Fuller's conflict of interest claim pursuant to the law of the case, finding that this court had already heard and decided that issue against Mr. Fuller. We will argue that this court should hold that the direct appeal is not binding law of the case because all decisions made by Mr. Fuller and by this court during its appeal were products of an overturned procedural rule.
Well, but that gets back to my point. It's sort of backwards because Second Circuit had a different kind of rule where they required exhaustion. We've never required exhaustion, have we?
You haven't required exhaustion, Your Honor, that's true. However, what Massaro provided for a defendant in Mr. Fuller's shoes was certainty. The rule in Geenan was that since Mr. Fuller was represented by new counsel on his appeal, unless he could not bring his appeal without new facts, or it seemed to him when he was writing his direct appeal, he could not bring his appeal without new facts, he had to bring it on direct appeal, or he would risk that the government would argue on the 2255 motion that should have brought it on his direct appeal. Since Massaro has come across now and said that you have the option, period, to bring it on a collateral appeal, it's made it very simple and very clear. There's no longer any decision that needs to be made by the original appellate counsel as there was in this case. In fact, the Massaro court said that the uncertainty caused by the old rule, and it did cite the Geenan frequently in its decision, would compel people like Fuller to raise their issues before they had the chance to develop the facts in a district court setting.
Which is what we've always said.
Right. It's now.
But that's. It looks like what you really want are two bites at the apple. You want to take direct appeal, be able to take it in direct appeal, and then come back on a 2255.
No, Your Honor.
Different issues, but the same idea of ineffective assistance.
That's true. We don't want two bites of the apple, Your Honor. We feel that there is pressure to make a decision quickly during the direct appeal. He made the decision, and he lost. And what we want now is the opportunity to get the evidentiary hearing that the Supreme Court has decided is worthwhile. The Supreme Court said that if you, being Mr. Fuller, brought this claim on direct appeal, he would lose, likely, even if he had a meritorious claim. So if he did lose, the Supreme Court turned out to be right. What we think is Mr. Fuller should be able to go back and get his evidentiary hearing and look at the facts. The facts that were available to him on direct appeal were what his counselor did during the hearing. The facts that were not available to him were why. Those are the facts he needs. Those are the facts that are necessary to effectively resolve his claim. Moving on to the law of the case, Your Honors, United States v. Habig shows that this court has been willing to diverge from the law of the case. In that case, briefly, the government conceded that a certain rule of law applied to the first appeal. This court found against the government. In its second appeal, the government retracted its concession that a certain rule of law applied, and this court specifically declined to address or declined to follow the law of the case. There had been no change in the law, procedural or substantive, and there were no new facts. The only change was that the government changed its mind on what law it felt applied. That was enough. Here, regardless of the degree of pressure, there was some pressure for Mr. Fuller to make a decision to bring a direct appeal. He made the decision, and according to Judge Easterbrook, it was a foredoomed appeal. He did lose, regardless of the merits. That pressure is gone. This is a major change in the procedural law. I'm out of time. Does the court have any more?
Can you get an extra minute, please?
No, those are the points I wanted to hit. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. My name is Alice Green. I represent the government in this appeal. Let me address a couple of points that counsel raised first. The government does agree that under Massaro, we can no longer argue that Mr. Fuller could not bring his new ineffective assistance of claims, as we argued below. That is all we are conceding. We do not concede that a remand is required under Massaro for an evidentiary hearing. Mr. Fuller is as this court knows, he's a savvy, twice convicted federal defendant.
Would you go over your concession again? I read it here, and you just said, would you say it again?
Okay.
What you conceded?
Right, we had to consider all of this happened before Massaro was decided. We argued procedural default on the additional ineffective assistance claim to the district court. After Massaro came down, the way we read it and the way our superiors read it in the Department of Justice, we believe that we can no longer make that procedural default argument as to the new aspect of his ineffective assistance claim. We don't believe it has any merit. We don't believe he has produced any objective, credible evidence to get to the threshold of having a hearing on those claims.
District court didn't hold in favor of you with regard to procedural default, did he?
Yes, it did. Okay. It did. It did decide on a procedural default, and that leaves this court with two possibilities. It could remand to the district court to allow the district court to address that claim on the merits in the first instance, but we don't think that's necessary here because we don't think there's any. We think it would be a futile exercise. We don't think there's any proof that Mr. Fuller has given to the court to get him to a hearing. And Galbraith, as a matter of fact, is a case where this court did not agree with the district court's procedural default holding and went ahead and decided on the merits. And we think this case is very similar to Galbraith and others, Rodriguez as well, for the proposition that you've got to have some objective proof that you're offering the district court under 2255 before you can get a hearing. A hearing is not to just flesh out whether you might have a claim. You have to have something in the form of some supporting, corroborating affidavits, which Mr. Fuller could have had from his new appellate counsel on direct appeal. I think it's very significant in this case that Mr. Fuller has never raised the claim that his new appellate counsel on direct appeal was in any way ineffective for either bringing the conflict claim on direct appeal, which he did not have to bring under Gwinnan, had new appellate counsel thought further evidence needed to be developed outside the record, nor does he fault him for failing to raise any sentencing challenges, and they could have been raised on direct appeal under plain error, which is a much easier hurdle than trying to raise them now in a 2255. We do not think that Massage has changed the landscape in any way on law of the case, so we believe that the conflict claim should be upheld based on law of the case. However, even if it is reviewed again, this court has a very good opinion analyzing that claim, and Mr. Fuller has no evidence at this point outside the record that would support his claim. If he did have any, it might conceivably have been the malpractice suit that he alleges he had filed and he relied on in 2255 below, but this court can take judicial notice that that suit has been dismissed. So other than that, the grievance letter from the bar is not dispositive as to attorney misconduct. It just simply is a letter in response to Mr. Fuller's request for fee arbitration. So it's not a well-founded grievance that could support a claim of attorney misconduct. I think that covers the main points I had. Unless there are further questions, we would rest on our
brief.
Thank you.
All right. I think your time is up. How much do you want? Half a minute or 1 minute? Yes, his time is up, but we will give you an extra minute. Go ahead. Come right forward, please.
A couple of very quick things. With regard to the merits, again, I will just reiterate that essentially this claim has never been ruled on the merits, and now the government is asking you to rule so, citing Galbraith as a precedent for that. There's factual differences between the two cases that are distinct. In Galbraith, this court ruled that defendant had not a scintilla of evidence, either an affidavit or any other probative valuable evidence to support his claim. That was a claim that his counsel had given him ineffective assistance by failing to inform him that by pleading guilty he was losing the opportunity to appeal his suppression ruling. In this case, we have a ineffective assistance of counsel at sentencing, and in support of that claim, we have the sentencing hearing transcript, which is evidence of the fact that he did not object to three sentence level enhancements. On top of that, as I stipulated before, we have the original pro se pleading by the defendant in the 2255 motion, which could operate as an affidavit. Third, in the case of Galbraith, an affidavit from him simply stating his recitation of the facts of what he believed had happened would have been enough to satisfy, just as counsel did never told me. That's an affidavit. Here, it would have been useless for Fuller to issue an affidavit stating counsel never objected at sentencing because there was a judge there, there was a court reporter there, and we had the transcript to prove it. So an affidavit in that regard would not have really helped him in any way. And we have other probative evidence which would merit such an evidentiary hearing back in the district court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court will take the case under advisement. Thank you all for the help. The court is adjourned tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m.